Discovery 1, Module 3, Part 2. Do we have any questions from last week before we move into Chapter 3, Part 2? Okay, how about questions on any of the labs?
Has anyone started the peer-to-peer ones with the two computers?
Some have. I've gotten at least one lab in from somebody that did it. I don't remember who it was.
I think that was Sam.
Yeah, I sent mine in. Oh, by the way, are you hearing me yet?
Yeah, that's better.
Yeah.
That's better.
Yeah, you were right, Carrie. It is interesting and kind of fun.
Look, it's hard to set up and it's time consuming as far as the, 10 minutes to wire everything up and mess around, and once you overcome the terror of setting static IP addresses after you've remembered what the IP addresses were, I should actually write up some instructions on how to use NetSH to dump your current configuration for those people who are really petrified of changing it so they can just throw it back when they're done.
That was the command I couldn't remember. Thank you, Carrie.
It's netsh dump greater than a file name, and that dumps your entire current network configuration, and then to get it back you go netsh exec file name, and it reloads the entire configuration.
That will be rather useful. Alright, that will definitely be rather useful. So, other questions, either on labs or anything that we have covered in last week's lecture? Okay, then let's go ahead and move on to, this will be Discovery 1, Module 3, Part 2. Okay, so, where we left off, we are starting to build the access layer of a network. And the first thing that they talk about in the text is the access layer itself, which is, according to them, the most basic layer. They consider it a local network. Well, that make it a little confusing, but that's what they want to consider it. Alright, so your access layer connects hosts via hubs or switches. Now, they get into the function of hubs. They get into both functions of hubs and switches, so that's where we're heading. Hubs are basically nothing more than repeaters. They repeat traffic from one port to all other ports and all other connected hosts. This is not exactly a good thing at times, because you end up with a lot of collision. You can end up with a lot of collisions depending on how many hosts want to transmit at any given time. So now, you have an area of the network called collision domain. So this is an area of the network that receives collisions, which are nothing more than just messages that have been really, really garbled from two hosts trying to send at the same time. So each host collects the collisions, and then they have certain algorithms that they use, and they'll wait a given period of time before they try to retransmit. Now, there are certain, like I said, there's certain algorithms that they use. They don't go into it in Discovery, I don't believe. I think IT Essentials will go into some of it a little bit more in depth, won't it? I think so. That'll be Chapter 8 of IT Essentials. Okay, so if you have, the more hosts that you have connected to a hub, the greater chance that you will have collisions. So, then that will basically clog up your network, take up all your bandwidth and slow down your network because of a whole bunch of traffic being sent at one time. Alright, so that's pretty much all there is to hubs. And the other name they do use is concentrators. So,
Multiport repeater is the other one they use.
Yeah, that's
too
true. That is true. Which is kind of why I referred to it as a repeater anyway. That is true. So, questions on hubs.
Who's seen one? Anyone seen a hub? I have, but then again, I'm old.
Somebody showed me one once.
Yeah, I have one sitting on a shelf right here.
Don't throw it out
the handle. I actually have. Yeah, they are. I actually have a couple that are actually still in use.
Why would they be handy more than a router?
No, I didn't say they were handier than a router. I said they were handy. You can often connect a few machines together on a hub, and because the hub repeats all of the packets out to all of the other ports, you see all of the packets travelling on the wire, not just the ones that are broadcasted or destination to a particular computer. So they're very handy for packet sniffing.
Yes, they are. Very handy for that. All right, so let's go ahead and move on to talking about switches. So, switches are similar to hubs, except they only send to a given port and only send based on the MAC address. So you're not going to get the repeat function that the hubs give you to all the ports. Now, your switches have a MAC address table that they use, so they will know which port to send out information to. And they know which MAC addresses, which hosts are connected to which ports. And they do keep this in the MAC address table. Now, they do actually talk about this quite a bit. Well, not quite a bit, but they do talk about it enough in the text. So, anyway, with the MAC address table, with the MAC address table, if the host MAC address is in the table, then you get this temporary circuit that's made between the host and the destination and the source, and then the messages are transmitted, and then that circuit's pretty much cut off, unless it's needed again. Now, because of the switch using the MAC address, you can have multiple connections going on at once without the chance of collisions. So the MAC address tables, again, they're updated dynamically. So if the MAC address, the destination MAC address, isn't in the table, the switch will then basically do a flood, which is a broadcast to all the ports. Then the host with the correct MAC address sends it back and says, "Hey, this is my MAC address," so the switch knows where to go next time. Well, that's pretty much. Let's see. Yeah. I already covered the part about building the MAC address tables. Now, you can run into one problem here. If you run a hub on a switch port, all the MAC addresses with on that hub are... let's restart this. If you run a hub on a switch port, all the MAC addresses of the hosts connected to the hub are associated with that one switch port. So this is I don't know if you consider it a good or a bad thing, but if you have two hosts that are trying to communicate over the hub, then and it's on the same, they're trying to go from one host to another that are on the hub, the switch will discard the message because its source and destination are on the same port, and it just throws it out. Now, if collisions do occur on the port where the hub is connected, the switch will automatically just throw those messages out and say, "No, forget it, they're not going through." Now, each port on a switch has its own collision domain, so then you're really cutting down on the chances of collisions because you have fewer hosts in one collision domain.
Can I just put a sentence in here? Ian calls it is he says that the switch does what he calls micro-segmenting. So because of the way the switch little works, it opens up a little connection between the two computers that wants to talk, and then it shuts it down. And then it opens it up between the other two computers that wants to talk, and it shuts it down, and that's called micro-segmentation. He always says that when he does this lecture.
That's an interesting way to look at it. And it is true, with the way that the switches work. Okay. We have an activity here. And I'm just skimming through it to see what we need to do with it. Okay. I'm not exactly sure how we're going to do this one. But the way that it's set up is kind of interesting. This is, I'm not sure of what activity number it is. Let me look through the activity things here and see what we've got. Okay, I'm thinking we may have to skip this one, because I'm not sure how to go about it.
Another fun, broken, activity?
Yeah,
We're going to have so much fun rewriting those.
Yeah.
I know what I'll be doing during January.
What will you be doing in January? Are you working reworking activities?
Yeah.
Yay!
Yeah, let's just go ahead and skip that one, unfortunately, because that's just going to be a little bit of a mess trying to do this one in class. I'm looking at this and I'm going, that's not going to be an easy one to do. Not in class, at least. Alright. Let's go on to broadcast messaging. So, does anybody want to take a stab at what a broadcast message is?
A broadcast would be, a message going out to all the hosts?
Yes, that would be right.
There's unicast and multicast. That's different than broadcast, though, I think.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yep. Broadcast is, you're right, with it going one host sends to every other host on the network. All right, so your MAC address, there's a special MAC address that's used for the broadcast address, and that is FF:FF:FF:FF:FF:FF. So it's just 48 bits that are all set to 1. So your local network, they call the broadcast domain. All right. So, in here they basically talk about that it may be better to split your local network into more smaller networks to improve performance, because if you have a lot of broadcast messages going out, then it's going to really drag your network down. Okay, so we have another activity, is switch behavior. And I even made a note in my notes that I'm not even sure how we're going to do this one. So, that one we're going to end up having to probably rewrite, because I have no idea how to do that one either. And unfortunately
guys, this chapter is littered with these activities.
Yeah,
suppose you could turn them into labs.
I don't know that they're worth it.
Probably not. Yeah, toward the end of the chapter, in this section, and building the distribution layer, which is the next section, there are a lot of activities that I pretty much just didn't even put in my notes because of the fact that, you know, there's no real way to get them across orally. But you could do them if you could actually, like, see the Flash content and then go into that one, but This way, good question. Not sure exactly how to go about that.
It's probably worth mentioning that when they get reworked in January, that'll all be happy times, but it is very important to know where frames go as far as switches are concerned, because they do have questions where there's four PCs connected to this hub and two PCs connected to that switch and three PCs connected to that other switch, and if you send a frame from host A, where's it going to go?
Yeah, I wish there was an easy way to do these in class, but I'm very much unsure of that. But we'll see what we can do about reworking them. So, let's go ahead and move on to MAC and IP addressing. So, the first thing they talk about under this subsection is the Address Resolution Protocol, which is ARP. So, if you have a given IP address, your ARP will give you the MAC address for that IP address. So you can actually play with this, and I don't remember, one of the labs might actually require that. So you go through your command prompt, do an ARP-A, and it will give you everything you ever wanted to know about what you're connected to and the MAC addresses and all that good fun stuff. Okay, so they actually do talk about the Address Resolution Protocol. And there are three steps involved. So you have to know the IP address. So you go, and the sending host will go through, and it will create a broadcast frame. And it will send it to the broadcast MAC address, so everybody gets it. So then in the frame you have the IP address of the destination that you're trying to send to. Once that message is sent out, each host in your network goes out, it receives the message, compares the IP address to its own IP address, and then if it matches, then it goes and sends the MAC address back to the source, so the source can then figure out and say, okay, I found it now. Now, then the sending host goes back and puts the MAC address and the IP address in the ARP table. Nice, wonderful, fun stuff. Glad we don't have to do that as humans, because I'm sure that would be rather interesting times. All right, questions so far?
No.
Okay, now we... what's that?
No, they just
said
no.
That was a no.
Oh, okay. Okay, so next section is building the distribution layer of a network. And they talk about the distribution layer, which is the first section. Now, since your local network can be split into local networks, they actually do have a list of criteria that you can use. That being your physical location, logical function, security requirements, application requirements. Alright, so once you've kind of split that up, your distribution layer is, let's do it this way. What is a distribution layer? We'll do it that way.
Sorry, did somebody ask me something?
Not really. It's just a general question of, out to everybody listening as to what the distribution layer was. Because that's kind of how I wanted to handle that.
Does anybody remember? Because, like, these are odd terms, but they do keep coming up, and you sort of wander along one day and you go, oh, that access layer, core layer, and distribution layer is a pile, and then somebody says it, and you go, oh, I should have known what those terms were. That's what happened to me anyway.
And if I'm not mistaken, I believe these did come up last week.
Hmm.
distribution layer, that's the packets. No, that's the frames, I thought, isn't it?
No. Access is the networky stuff in your local stuff. Distribution is the routers and the switches. And then the core layer is the high-speed stuff.
Your the way distribution. I remember it,
yeah.
I was going to say, the way I remember it is access gives me access to the network. Distribution shovels all my stuff where it needs to go, and core is the really high-end stuff that I don't have to worry about as a home user.
And that's a fairly good way to remember it, because your distribution layer is the layer that your routers and some of your switches, your more powerful switches, connect through. That's the layer that all of your networks get connected through. So if you have two different networks that are trying to talk to each other, that's the layer that they go through. And in the distribution layer, you can filter for security reasons. Now, as I said, the routers are the ones that actually connected this layer. So, conveniently, let's talk about the function of routers. Now, routers and routers forward based on the network portion of the IP address. So they have these nice, wonderful routing tables that say, okay, this network's connected to this port, that network's connected to another port, and they keep all this nice, wonderful information. Now, so for instance, if you have, not that it's probably there, but if you have a four-port router and you have four different networks connected to it, or three different networks, on port one you have one network, port two you have another, port three you have another, your router builds the routing table based on that. Now, they also have, the routing tables also have routes to remote networks. So let's just throw this out there. What does it mean if somebody actually puts out the term routing?
That would be routing different packages between networks, right? Or packages, say?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Because it's just basically how the packets are forwarded between networks. Now, the routers actually take frames. Once they get them, they will de-encapsulate them and take the destination IP address. Then they'll re-encapsulate it, and they determine from that IP address where the packet needs to be sent. So that's pretty much all that is. It's just de-encapsulate it, get the IP address you need, figure out where it needs to be sent, re-encapsulate it, and send it. Now, the routers don't forward broadcast messages, so if a broadcast message is sent up, then it's pretty much just dropped right then and there by the router. Broadcast messages stay in local networks. They don't ever get forwarded on.
I'm going to add something here, in that, in fact, one of the biggest things that routers do is to act as a boundary for broadcast messages, because you do not want broadcast messages going beyond networks. If you had broadcast messages going beyond your local network, the internet could not function. You would have broadcast messages going everywhere, and any network beyond that would just get flooded. Just a little thought to ponder. It's one of the biggest reasons for routers to exist, in a way.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Just a quick question. Am I breaking up to anybody?
Not really. No. Your gating is sensitive, but it hasn't chopped you off, so it is gating correctly.
Okay. I was just wondering, because Aiden and Nehemiah were both, like, really breaking up here, so I didn't know if it was on my end or what the deal was. Just thought I'd throw that out. So like I said, I didn't know if it was my end or if it was something going on just in general. Okay. Do we have questions on the routers? Okay, so let's talk about default gateway.
There's one point I was going to add, and a lot of people do this. They go and buy a router for their internet, and then they go and connect another router to it, and then they wonder why their internet breaks. Oh, sorry, Brian.
Oop. Oh, no, that's fine. But yeah, go ahead. Go ahead with your point, if you wanted to make it.
I was just going to say that some people buy a router, and then they go and buy this other wireless access point router thing, and then they connect the router to the router, and they run into all sorts of problems because they don't realize that they've basically split their network into three bits. In other words, the ISP, router 1 and router 2. So it's very important to realize that routers split networks up, and unless you know what you're doing, you won't be able to see the printers and that machine in the study.
And that is a valid point. If you want to actually try to do something like that and connect two routers together, you're going to have to do especially wireless, you're going to have to do a WDS, the wireless distributed system, if the routers support it. Which is one thing I kind of learned the hard way. Alright, so let's talk about the default gateway. Now, your hosts use the ARP to forward messages directly to each other, especially if they're on a local network. That doesn't happen with routing so much. So if it is if a message is destined for a remote host that is not in the local network, then they have to go through the router, which then becomes your default gateway. Due to the fact that that's how you're going to access any networks outside of your local network. Alright. So, routers actually have a couple of different tables that they use. They have ARP tables as well, which are the tables of the addresses of the individual hosts. Then, of course, they have the routing tables, which are the addresses of the different networks that are connected. Now, the routing tables can be updated dynamically or manually. Quite frankly, I'm not sure that I'd want to try to do that manually. What would your take be on that, Kerry?
For ARP tables, often people do ARP tables statically for security. In other words, this machine must have this MAC address and it must exist on this port. Otherwise, we're not letting it on. It's for where you don't want people moving their laptop around and plugging it into whatever wall socket they want. Not recommended for the average home user, but very useful in a corporate environment.
What about for the routing tables? Because that would probably
Yeah, you do
be...
those by hand. Yeah. You need to do static routes if you're routing to stub networks, and you do them if you don't want the overhead of a routing protocol. We don't really cover that in Discovery 1, but yes, I do all my routing tables by hand because I've got small routing tables. So it's only when you get into the big stuff that you start running routing protocols. It makes no sense to run RIP for three subnets.
Okay. All right. Did you have something you wanted to add, Nehemiah?
Nope, sorry about the hotkeeper mistake.
Okay. No problem. I just want to make sure I wasn't going to leave you out. Alright, so if the packets are destined for a host that is outside of what the routing tables or what the router knows, normally they would drop it. So this is definitely not a good thing. This is why we maintain default routes for networks. So your router will go to another router, like your ISP's router. If it doesn't know where to to forward something, then it just goes that default route. Because dropping packets is just not a good thing. Routers forward packets to directly connected networks or another router if that happens to, if that is needed. Now, packets have to include the MAC address of the destination. Now, the ARP tables are maintained for each port that something's plugged into the router. And that's pretty much all for that section. Questions? Okay. So let's go ahead and talk about local area networks. Now, in general, these are referred to that they're networks, or a single network, or multiple networks, depending on how you want to look at it, that are under the same administrative control. Now, they used to be defined based on physical location, but not so much anymore. Because you can collect, you can connect various local networks and make one rather large local network for like universities or some other type of campus or corporate enterprise, and of course then it would be under the same administrative control. So that's pretty much how that's defined. And then also in that section they talk about the intranet. That's I-N-T-R-A-N-E-T. Not to be confused with internet, because they're two different things. But your intranet is basically just a private network that can be accessed by any authorized personnel. So if you are not authorized to be on the network, well, hopefully you're not going to be able to get on if everything's set up right. Okay. Questions. Alright, so let's talk about adding hosts to local and remote networks. Now, your hosts obviously can be in one local network, or they can be split into multiple networks. Now, if, as stated previously, if all the hosts are in one local network, they can just use ARP, communicate directly. If they're not, well, then obviously, as stated before, they have to use a router. Now, the routers can introduce latency to network traffic. Now, let's just do this way. Anybody want to define latency?
Or is that a slowdown of time between the packets?
Yes, that would be. It's pretty much just a time delay from when packets are sent and received. And yes, your routers can introduce a little bit of that delay. Now, they do actually have a packet tracer activity, which of course we won't be going over because it's not accessible. Now they do actually, they do actually put in here that there's supposed to be some kind of online packet tracer thing that we'll be able to use, but at the moment, good question as to when it's going to be ready. And just as a coding and programming thing, that's I can definitely understand that. I can really understand that, because it does take time to get people together to make that all work and come together. All right. Questions before I think we're actually on the last section of the chapter. So questions before we move on. All right. I believe this is the last section of the chapter. So, this is plan and connect local network. So, obviously, when you plan your Ethernet network, you want to document everything. which is the first section. So they say that you want to plan a network based on following information. So that would be the number and type of hosts to be connected, applications to be used, sharing and...
So, Carrie's not...
Okay. All right. Let's see, where were we? Applications to be used, sharing and internet connectivity requirements, security and privacy considerations, let's see, and reliability and uptime expectations. And your connectivity requirements, which obviously include wired and wireless. So, now, when you're planning your network, you want to kind of plan things out and design things out ahead of time, like your physical and your logical topology. So, let's go back to last week and redefine what the physical topology is.
That would be how your network is physically laid out, the cords and where each cord goes.
Very good. And the logical topology
would be where each device is in relation to a router. Sorry, I probably shouldn't have...
Your logical topology, according to the chapter, pretty much groups your hosts by what they are planning to use, as far as applications go, if I'm not entirely mistaken. So that's where that one goes. So in your design of your network, you want to design and plan out your physical and your logical topologies. You want to design and document them out. Now, in doing so, you want to take into consideration the following. Your physical environment, like where your network's going to be installed, temperature control, because your hosts and your routers and switches and so forth have various temperatures that they would pretty much prefer that the equipment be kept at, and your requirements for proper operation, and also your availability and placement of power outlets. You also want to plan for the physical configuration of your network, which would be your physical location of your devices, like your routers, your switches, and your hosts. Now, and the other thing you want to plan for is how your devices are interconnected. And you also want to plan your location and your length of all cable runs. Now, you also want to plan for the hardware configuration of your devices and the logical configuration of your networks, which would be your location and the size of your broadcast domains, your IP addressing scheme, your naming scheme. And the other thing you want to plan for is your sharing configuration, which would be the permissions that everybody has to access the various resources on the network. So, have I thoroughly confused anybody yet?
No.
Okay, then let's go ahead and talk about prototypes. Let's define exactly what a prototype is. Okay, your prototype is basically going to be a model of your network. You want to be able to create like a mini model of it and test it before it actually goes online. Because let's face it, Yeah. That's a good point.
What you guys do is going to be different for a home user. You're not going to have a prototype. You're just going to get up at about 1 or 2 in the morning when no one's doing the internet and try this stuff out. Because, well, really, there's no other way to do it. So just get up when there is when everybody else is asleep or when they go away for the weekend and do your playing that way. Drawing a map isn't going to help you guys.
Toys.
Maybe writing out toys. Absolutely. You can write out, though, how you want your network to be laid out. You can write a network document. In fact, we did this as a final project in some class that Carrie had us do it for. I don't remember what one.
I also try to make sure that Grace has got something social to do on the weekend that I want to work with the internet. So we find her some cool people to hang out with, and we send her out of the house, and then I take the internet down, and then in theory, she's still out when I've finished fixing it. So that's the other thing you've got to do, is get the people who depend on the internet and that can't be disconnected from Facebook. Well, not that Grace can't be disconnected from Facebook. Get the people who depend on and the ones who can't be disconnected from Facebook out of the house before you start messing with the internet infrastructure. As far as prototyping and stuff is concerned, though, I would probably say, if you're going to buy a new router and stuff, play with the web interface disconnected from the network. Leave your old router in place and learn how to use it before you switch the new one in. That's what I'd do as a home user when prototyping was important. Unless the old router's been hit by lightning and has smoke pouring out of it.
Don't let the smoke out.
I'm putting away groceries so nobody asks me anything. I'm not here.
Yes, smoke is bad to leave devices. Trust me, I know.
For those that there's a bit of tech lore and for those that have worked in the tech industry, there's a joke that all devices actually run on a little bit of smoke that is in every piece of technology. And if you let the smoke out, it won't work anymore. So don't let the smoke out. That's not one that is around quite as much, but that especially used to be around in the older days as a sort of tech joke. It's still around, but not quite as much as it used to be.
I've heard that one some, but not. You're right, not quite as much. Now,
they don't tell that one quite as much as it used to be. I still like it though. I heard that in my first CCNA class back in 2005, I think it was. Yeah, 2004. Oh, he's an hour late, but he's here.
Hey, that's all
right. Yeah, now welcome here.
And the power's
sorry,
back on.
But I had to.
How are you, Bert?
Not bad, you?
Good. We're just finishing up lecture. Are you okay from the hurricane?
There's no hurricane around where I'm at right now.
Oh, good.
No, that was way far north, but it has been raining a lot, so we've been having lots of power outages and the like.
Well, just to bring you up to speed, Bert, we've pretty much covered building the access layer. We are in building the distribution layer. We're talking about multifunction devices right now. So, they talk about integrated routers, which... some of them can be such a pain to work with. I know. But they're routers, switches, they can have the DSL modems and wireless access points rolled into one. I have worked with some of these, and they can be a pain at times to work with. But they can be good, because then you cut down on the number of devices that you actually have to plug in and put on your network. Now, the only problem to these nice, wonderful integrated routers is if one part of it breaks, well, then you might as well throw it away, because you can't use any other part of it. You gotta go buy a new one. But I think they're coming down in price, so... I think one of the last ones I saw was a couple hundred bucks. That was a DSL modem, 10100 router and wireless access point rolled into one. It's a Starbridge Networks thing. Now, they also talk in this section about the ISR, which is an integrated services router. Now, these actually have modularity, so if one part breaks, you can still use the rest of it and just replace the part that it has broken. These are all Cisco products. Now, some of the activities in some of the labs, I think, actually refer to the Linksys WRT300N as an ISR. So, yeah, I think these are the Cisco products, and some of the ISRs are the big Cisco products, if I'm not entirely mistaken.
Now, the one thing is that, I don't know if this is actually completely done yet or not, but they've been saying that they're going to be discontinuing Linksys, and they're going to bring everything under the Cisco brand, even for home products. Now, whether they have actually finished doing this or not, I'm not sure.
No, they've still got a lot of Linksys.
Okay. They've been saying that they're going to do this, but whether they will, when they will get around to doing that, I'm not sure when the
Okay, apparently Linksys is now branded Cisco. Says
yes, they are branded Cisco. If you go to Linksys.com, it'll say Linksys by Cisco.
Maybe they chose to do that rather than full on get rid of the Linksys. But for a while, at least, they were saying they were gonna just do away with the Linksys brand.
Did Brian get disconnected?
I'm not sure. His connection has been a little bit shaky.
I think he may have. I think someone probably turned on the microwave and...
That does happen to him sometimes.
Is something different about... Why is everyone showing up, or is it just me, that everyone's showing up just in, like, the entrance area?
Because we didn't go to the lecture theater today.
We didn't bother going to lecture, because we only had, like, two people.
Oh, wow. I'm really sorry. I think my CMOS battery might be going bad on this computer because my clock looks different just about every time I turn the computer on. It's different.
Yep. That is possible.
Yeah. It's all okay.
The minutes are right, but it always puts me in different time zones.
Oh, dear.
No, I've never seen that.
Yeah, that's weird. I know.
That's a lot.
I've never heard of that either, but I've reset it like 3 times and... And now I'm showing, like, 2 in the morning. I wonder if it's enough ahead. No, am I enough ahead? Maybe I'm actually showing universal time now, but I didn't set it up to do that. I wonder why it is.
Hello, Britain. All right, Brian, you back with us?
Nah, he just disconnected. It'll take him a minute.
What were those initials that we were just using for that type of router? IR what? And what does that stand for?
Just...
He'll be back. He's probably had to reboot or something.
Bert, the ISR is the Integrated Services Router. It's a Cisco product. And it's just a multi-function network device.
Yeah.
That's the one where if one bit of it dies, that everything dies. It's not like a modular one, right? Because they had a modular one in there too, right?
Yeah, you can get modular ones. He's back!
Oh, there he is.
Okay, I don't know what just happened there.
Somebody used a microwave in your vicinity.
That was rather weird. I'm sitting there talking away, and then all of a sudden, recording stopped! Disconnected! So I guess I probably need to restart the recording, don't I?
Carrie's got one, but yeah, you probably won't.
Carrie and I didn't have...
Okay, recording started again. Let me see, where was I now? Oh, okay. Let's see. So, they have a section here that is about connecting to a Linksys router. This may or may not be of use to a lot of people, but they threw it in here anyway. So they say that computers that are connected to the switch ports are in the same broadcast domain, which is pretty much a rehash of what they said earlier. And then, of course, for those who've done some of the labs, if you know that if the computers have different IP addresses, well, at least with the network portion, they're not going to be able to communicate. Now, they talk about Wind is using computer names as well as IP addressing for network purposes. And one other thing they do use in Wind is the work groups. So what you want to do once you actually get the thing connected is you want to find your baseline or your normal network operation, because that way you can kind of track problems as they come up. That way you have a baseline or a base to be able to go from and work from. So if you notice a bunch of slowdowns on your network, then you can kind of track down from there what's going on with it and troubleshoot based on that particular baseline. All right, and any questions on that little section? And just to let everybody know,
I didn't get what the.
Go ahead, Bert.
I wasn't really clear on exactly what data you want, what is the meant by the baseline. Could you explain that a little bit more? I didn't quite. I don't know if I spaced something out or.
Well, okay. So what happens is you get a router, and once you get your network set up, then you can kind of go in and figure out, you know, how data is going to flow through your network, what kind of messages, what kind of network traffic you're using, what kind of bandwidth requirements you have, and then from there you can kind of form your baseline. So it's just your normal everyday network operation. So
think of it as your average.
Okay. It's not like a real set formula or anything or procedure, just kind of a general kind of estimation of what's going on.
Yeah, that's pretty much all it is. It's just like the average use of your network. And then if something really gets wacky, then you can kind of go back to that particular average and troubleshoot from there.
Just make sure that you're looking at it on an average day or two, and you may want to look at it over a two or three day period, so that you're pretty sure that you have a good data set. But you're just trying to get a good idea of what's probably normal. For your network, so you know what it's gonna look like on that router, on that network, and so that if something goes wrong, then you can know what it should normally look like.
That doesn't sound good, but anyway.
Sorry about that.
It's a Star Trek.
That was the phone. so that you know what I think you know what I was trying to get at before I got a little bit knocked off my thought process. Does that make more sense, Bert?
Yeah, I think I pretty well have the idea. Just to further that just a tiny bit more, was that something I could, get? Is there software actually in most routers to give you kind of an average over longer periods of times, or would I want to take, several samples of just how it is in a given moment to make up my estimation?
Not most home routers. I would say that you're going to probably have to more be looking at logs. Kira might be the better one to answer that one.
What is the question?
whether there's software to give an idea of a
network baseline.
An overall usage pattern over time. Baseline, exactly. Or is it something I would just take like a sample from several given moments?
But is there anything on the router itself?
No, not usually on the router.
Yeah, that was my thought. I mean, you're probably going to just sort of watch the logs, and take sample points over the day. I mean, the router can give you some log data.
Our Mikrotik has something like it, actually, that I've seen on there. And it'll tell you averages for for 5 minutes ago, a day ago, all this stuff.
Okay. Yeah, that's the kind of thing I was wondering about.
Except you can only see the averages. You can't actually see the entire graph line. So you need to write some code that will actually process the log file. It's called MRTG. Or RRDF if you really want to recode the Perl one. Have fun with it.
What language is the MRTG in?
You don't need to rewrite the application. You just parse the log file. You can actually do it in Excel. You'd suck the log file into Excel and look at the values that way.
Ah, yes, Pranav does that. He's told me a little bit about that one. And I believe that may be a Microsoft thing. It's a network log parser that he uses to do that.
Yeah, it's something we're still doing a lot of development on. I mean, MRTG is one tool. There are plenty of others. What's actually on the Mikrotik is MRTG. MRTG will run under Windows, but there are sort of tools you can get, like Net, whatever, Heartbeat Monitor by some people that you've never met that's supposed to tell you how good your internet is. And we used to hate people with these sorts of tools that didn't know what they were doing because they used to ring up the ISP and complain and go, my internet connection is going at 3.1k a second and Net Whiz Bang Pro says it should be running at 3.4. What's wrong with your equipment? So use your benchmark sensibly and make sure you know what you're doing.
Oh Lord, I've run into enough people in my time of doing tech support and repairing computers that they're like, you know, they run cable modems and they're like, oh yeah, well we're supposed to get like 500k a second or a megasecond, whatever it is, or 500 kbps or a meg or 1 mbps, and they go and they use some IP or what do you want to call it? Some network analyzing tool.
Bandwidth tool.
Some speed monitor, yeah. The bandwidth tools out of, like, Texas, and it shows, like, 40 or 50k a second, and they're like, well, why is that? And we've had to sit down and explain to them, you know, there are network congestion that happens, there's delays because of the routers, and several hops that it takes to get from there to here, and it can be a mess. What's that? Alright, does that kind of answer questions on that section? And everybody can rejoice because we're on the last section. Then we get the nice, wonderful, fun chapter quiz. Alright, so we'll talk about... yeah, woohoo! Alright, so we'll talk about sharing resources. Now, they talk mainly about Windows XP, and this thing with simple file sharing. And they say if this is if this is enabled, well, then you can't deny certain users and groups. Quite frankly, I'm not the one to ask about that, because I don't know which users and groups they claim you can't deny. Because I don't use it. but if it's turned off, you have several different options for sharing. You have full control, you have modify, you have read and execute, list folder contents, read, and write. And then they actually go into a section about mapping network drives, which, if anybody's ever been on a network, and you go in and you have another computer that's shared, and I think this is covered in the Sharing Resources Lab, if I am not entirely mistaken. If it's not, you just basically go into another computer's drives, whatever folders or drives that are shared. You right-click it, hit your contact or your application key, or Shift F10, one of the three options. And good evening, and you'll see a map network drive, and then you can give it a name from all the way up to like drive Z, and then anytime you go and click on that letter under My Computer or Windows Explorer, you automatically get redirected to that shared folder or shared resource. And that's pretty much all there is to that. Any questions? Alright. Let's knock this chapter quiz out.
I have one question. I don't deserve an answer because I was not in the class at the moment when you covered it, so feel free to tell me no. But when you were talking about, or in the chapter, they were talking about frames, and just to get my, to make sure I'm understanding this clearly, a packet is just the information contained within a frame. Am I correct in that? Is that, in my terminology correct, or the actual data, not the data of like who it's to or from, but would the packet be considered the actual information, or what is the difference in a packet and a frame? Maybe I should even ask that way.
Okay. Do you want to cover that one, Nehemiah?
What I'm going to say is a packet is a different stage of the encapsulation process. Tell you what, Bert. Because I'm trying to remember how much of that was actually covered in this chapter, too.
Didn't compare one to the other. They just kind of mentioned packets a little bit after they'd explained what a frame was, you know, that you had to give the destination and then the source and your start of message or what start of data, and then the check code at the end. I can't remember what that's supposed to be called, that last four byte thing, but anyway,
well, aren't frames,
they mentioned packets after that.
I thought frames were just like how things were transferred over one specific cable, like one Ethernet cable, and the packets were what.
Remember that your packets have to do with IP addresses, your frames have to do with MAC addresses, and your segments are have to do with port numbers and transport layer, port numbers, destination, and I know what I'm talking about, really, I do. Destination and what is it?
Source and destination
ports, yes.
Source and destination, sorry.
No, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, packets are a different part as the PDU goes through different levels of the encapsulation process. It basically gets called different things as it goes through the encapsulation or decapsulation process. And packet is one of the things that gets called at one of the levels of that process. Frame is another one of the things that gets called depending on the level of that process.
Is it ever called a packet on an just within one access layer then, or does it have to go from
yes,
out of the original access layer to be called a packet?
It's called a packet at the layer.
I don't remember the layer, but your packets are And Grace or Carrie will probably correct me if I'm wrong, but your packets are going to be encapsulated into your frames, is I believe how it works. So your packets are just your...
That's what I was thinking. That's kind of how I started trying to ask the question, but...
Actually, I think your frames are encapsulated into your packets because, your frames are encapsulated into packets because the packets go to the IP. Grace said the packets go to the IP address. So when it gets to the router or the switch level, then it's sent to the individual MAC address. I believe is how it works.
Well, what you guys have to remember is that, I mean, it can go either way, because this is something, one of the things that I really struggled with, and I still struggle with this, because you have to remember I'm working off and on when I'm not struggling with my issues on my CCNA, and when things go travel through the ISO or the TCP/IP, you know, because they both, you know, both do apply. Or yes, I'm tired. I'm sorry. Yeah, OSI. You know, it does travel both ways. You know, and that's one of the hardest things that I had to try and remember. It can go up or down, depending on, you know. And we're getting a little bit off track, but
I kind of think
we're not getting off track at all.
No, not really.
We're getting this class would have been an excellent place to put the OSI reference model, because the people in this class actually would have been with it enough to understand what we were talking about.
That's probably true, and I sometimes wonder why they don't go into the OSI model a little bit. But
they don't, because they think these people do not have the, you know, information to understand it yet. The students we have in this course do, but a lot of the people
probably don't.
Our Korean class, we just confused in a huge way by bringing in the OSI reference model. This class, we could have gotten away with it.
That's probably true. And if you guys are interested, you know, maybe next week, if you guys are interested, maybe we will talk a little bit about the OSI model. Or if you guys want, I may not be here next week, but if you guys want, maybe I'll talk about it some the following week when I'm back.
It's 10:30. Sure. I can do a quick introduction if you want.
I think they'll get into chapter 6, but you can do a quick intro if you want.
Yes, I do. Okay.
Please.
There are seven layers in the OSI reference model. Does anyone... Aiden, do you know the seven layers of the OSI reference model?
I was afraid you were going to ask that. Okay. Presentation. I don't say in order. Presentation. Interface.
Okay, you don't. It's okay.
No.
All right.
It's okay.
Let me do it.
And honestly, when you do the OSI model, all of us have to remember them with a mnemonic, because there's no way, especially when we're remembering them at the beginning, none of us would remember it without a mnemonic. At least I don't think.
Oh, I remember their mnemonic. Please do not throw sausage pizza away. I just am not quite sure what that is.
It's hard. It's one of the harder things to remember.
It took me years to figure it out.
I think the only reason I remember it as well as I do is because I learned it when I was younger.
There was actually a nice little message sent out to the Indian list about it.
Yeah, some guy copied out of his university textbook. It was
Unfortunately, that's what he did.
Okay, so Brian, do you know them?
Let's see. You have your application, your presentation... Then I believe it goes to your session.
Transport.
Your. Or.
No, he's right.
Portland session?
Oh, is it?
No,
he's right.
It is Session. Please do. I'm sorry.
Session, then Transport, and then, let me see, where the hell am I? Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. Then I believe it goes to your network, your data link, and your physical.
Yay!
Yep, you're right.
Okay, so I was just trying to tell somebody I wasn't going to be able to talk to them at the moment. All right, so the process of going up and down through these layers, if you go from the application layer down to the physical layer, this is called encapsulation. And going from the physical layer up is called de-encapsulation. So let's talk about this in the context of sending an email. And this is going to be really crazy because I'm actually not looking at any notes. And this is probably the first time I've actually ever done this without looking at notes. So we'll see how this goes. Okay, so we've got the application layer, which is responsible for the applications, your email, your web pages, all of that. So protocols that might be taken care of by the application layer are SMTP, POP3, IMAP, HTTP, HTTPS, FTP, Telnet, these sort of things. This is going to be what shows the information on your screen. So you're going to write an email. Hi, instructors, here are my... and that's... Carrie says we don't have many of those. And you're going to press send. It is now going to leave the application layer and go to the presentation layer. The presentation layer, make sure that your information was in a format that could be understood by the email program. So it's going to make sure, yes, this is going to be an HTML email or web page or whatever when it gets back to the other end. Cool, that's done, it's formatted, it's all right. Then it's going to drop down to the session layer. And the session layer is going to open up a session to the other end. We're going to get ready to send this email. So I've got to make sure that a session's open to the server to send out this email. It makes sure that the session stays open as long as it needs to, and when it's done, it terminates that session. Any questions on the three top layers of the OSI reference model?
I'm going to add a note here. The session layer is also where security is handled, SSL, that sort of thing. That is also handled at the session layer.
Yay! Okay. Any other questions before we go on to the other four layers? The top layers are kind of grouped into one big blob of the top three layers, and you don't go into much more detail about them.
I thought the presentation layer was what the user saw. Oops.
Nope. That's the application. Okay. So next we go down to the transport layer. The transport layer is going to deal with sockets. And a socket is the source and destination ports, and I believe it gets into... Hold on.
Your sockets deal with your source and destination ports and addresses.
IP addresses.
If I'm not entirely mistaken. Yep.
So that is going to create something called a PDU, or segment. It's going to take the information, your email that you've sent, and break it up into tiny little chunks so that it can easily be sent over a network. At the other end, your transport layer is going to put them back together, but we will talk about that in a little while. So you've got this PDU, this little segment that is going to go down now to your network layer. And your network layer deals with the IP addresses and puts in... The transport layer also deals with error checking, I believe. Is that right? Yes. Okay, I've got a yes. All right. So your network layer is going to deal with the IP addressing. It's going to make sure those IP addresses are okay, and it's going to make this into a packet. So it goes from a segment, the network layer deals with IP addresses mainly, and it is now a packet. Next, you go down to the data link layer. It's going to add MAC addresses, probably the MAC address of your...
You skipped the
network
layer. No, I didn't.
Network layer deals with IP addresses. That was just what I was talking about.
Okay. Okay, never mind. You went back to the transport layer for the error checking.
Yeah, I did.
I missed that. I did. Obviously.
I did. It was a stream of thought that was odd. Okay. So the data link layer.
This deals with MAC addresses. Checked.
Yes, absolutely. My stream did not go through correctly, and it needed to be reordered. Okay, so data link layer. This deals with your MAC addresses. The data link layer is going to take that packet and put it in another little container and make it a frame that has the MAC address of where it needs to go. So probably the MAC address of your default gateway, unless this is a packet that's going somewhere else on your local network. And the frames will change as it goes through to the until it gets to the place it actually needs to go. Alright, so after the data link layer, it goes down to the physical layer. And these nice frames become ones and zeros and go screaming across your physical media, be it wireless, be it Ethernet, over to the ISP, probably onto some fiber cable going all the way across to the other person's ISP, our ISP, going through the ocean, through the Guam cable, over to Australia, and it reaches the physical... Yes, it reaches our physical network card as ones and zeros. My physical layer decodes that, passes it up to the data link layer, which makes sure that it has gone to the right... It actually goes to my... Yep. It's going to make sure it goes to the right MAC address. And it's going to go back up and keep de-encapsulating everything, making sure that it is getting to the right place. My session is going to close at the session layer. The presentation layer is going to figure out what it is going to hand up to the application layer that is readable. And there you go. I've got my labs. Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'm not going to remember it all, probably 100%, but yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Well, let me quiz you on it.
You'll get it a lot more in Chapter 6. Yes. Trust me.
Okay, cool.
That was just an introduction. Hopefully I didn't confuse anybody more than I helped.
No, it helped.
I really was not going to try to bring in the OSI reference model and try and fit it into this chapter, simply because I'm not sure how exactly I was going to do that.
Well, he asked, so we wouldn't have, but he was asking questions about it, and we had a bunch of time, so I figured we ought to.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
A virtual bullet for Bert.
No.
No, it's okay. It probably needed to be done, and now everybody's had some exposure to it through my barely legible ramblings, and they...
Well, that was a pretty good, especially for on the spot, orientation
very
to
good
it.
For on the spot. But then that is your favorite layer model, so...
Oh, it is my favorite layer model.
And Bert, I think you're in both IT Essentials and this course.
He is.
So you'll get so much of this. More of this. You'll get a lot more of this, I think, in chapter 8.
You'll get to hear almost the exact same lecture again in chapter 8 as I regurgitate it from my...
Okay, cool. I should remember it before Christmas then.
You'll get this in 6 here and 8 there and...
15, maybe. No, 15 is more about network design.
You'll get double whammy by the time you're done.
I don't think.
No, I think you're right.
But see, then you'll get... Then you'll get comparisons of the TCP/IP model and the OSI reference model, and then you'll really be like, okay.
Yeah, we just did one
that
today.
That turned my freaking brain to mush when I read that.
Yeah, if you need help with the comparison one,
I got subnetting better than I got.
Let me know.
I got through that.
Wow, your brain is really different. And you guys have 4. Potential discovery instructors. There are more instructors in this class right now than there are students.
Scary.
Yeah. So if you have questions or want help, this is completely and totally the time to ask.